All right, so I think we're back. Anyway, but what I was asking there, I wanted to know if when you guys were playing against North Carolina, if it's true that Coach Knight's advice to you was just don't let him dunk on you because that'll embarrass us both.
Yeah, well, he said three things. He kind of said that as a throw off, but he said don't let him get off. He said if he gets offensive rebound, if he gets you in the post, offensive rebound or back cut because they like the back cut. Then you're coming out. And by the way, don't let him dunk on everybody here. So, you know, that was kind of a throwaway line, but the three things were don't let him post you up. If you hit jump shots, you hit jump shots, but don't let him post you. Don't get an offensive rebound. And, don't let him back cut you. So.
Nice. So, I know obviously, between Twitter, and certainly on your radio show, you don't necessarily suffer fools lightly. That's one thing I think anybody notices. So, it would remind someone who, maybe who's an Indiana fan from back in the day, kind of the way Coach Knight used to treat the media a little bit. But does your public persona, I guess, in that, again, from the show, from Twitter, does that reflect anything that you picked up from Coach, or is that totally something that you developed independently?
It's kind of my neighborhood. This is why Indiana was a great fit for me, because I grew up in Northwest Indiana, where if you were full of shit, people told you were full of shit,
right?
And then you had to deal with it. So it's always been my thing. That's why people always say, well, Indiana, not for everybody, blah, blah, blah. Well, it was for me because it fit my persona perfectly. So, and part of that was Coach Knight. Coach Knight, his personality and my dad's personality were similar, except my dad didn't swear and my dad didn't get as mad, but they were very similar in, taking the anger out or taking the swearing out. They're very similar in how they treated people on a daily basis, so it always fit me.
Well, I know, as far as, again, with the media in which you work, again, between radio, especially social media, Twitter, I know you're one of the most interactive personalities that's out there. What drives that? What motivates you to be so active on Twitter?
I have a boring life, truthfully. I mean, I work 3 hours a day, and, what else do I do? My son's now in college. That, and I always thought, I never understood, I just never understood sports people that were standoffish. Like, I never understood when I'd go to Cubs games, it used to be guys would sign autographs at the rally. I never understood why everybody didn't just do that. Even as a little kid, I'm like, man, if I ever got in a position where people actually, gave a rats about me, I'm going to sign autographs, I'm going to talk, and that's just the way I was at Indiana. It was the way I was as a coach. I've never understood why you have to be a jackass, and shun people, just because you're in sports. I mean, it's just sports, for crying out loud. So Twitter's a part of it. Now, Twitter can become, as you got a blog. I'm sure every time you blog, people call you an idiot. Some people call you great. And so, Twitter can become a little bit confrontational, but, that's all right. I don't think it's thin skin. I think it's a part of, my makeup is if someone's going to come at me, I'll go back at them. And I don't think it's thin skin. It's just how I was brought up.
Absolutely. And so, you alluded to it there, when you were a kid and saying, hey, if I ever get to a point, and obviously at this point, you've had the opportunity to travel the country as a player and a coach and now a commentator. What would you, obviously I know you've got quite a bit of experience with the Big Ten and Indiana in general, but what school would you say right now or what building has the best environment in college basketball?
Well, of the ones I've done, it's really difficult to find a place, better than Indiana or Michigan State. I think that those two places kind of stand out. Wisconsin would be right in there as well. the thing about doing Big Ten games is, I think it's every year. I could be wrong, but I think it's every year the Big Ten leads the nation in attendance. So you're talking about big buildings with big student bodies, an active student body for basketball. So, you know, usually when we go in there on a Tuesday night, it's a really big game. So the crowd is, you know, ESPN's there, Tirico's there, and so everybody, you know, it's usually a hell of an environment. So there's really none that are bad. But, you know, in the Big Ten, Indiana's fantastic. I think Crean's done a great job of maintaining that, and if not enhancing that, particularly through some lean season. And Michigan State and Wisconsin, they're always, you know, they've always been great.
Absolutely. Well, do you ever, you know, in being around that so much, do you ever get the itch to get back into coaching?
Yes, when I talk to the coach that won after a game. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
The thing about, there's nothing, Evan, there's nothing like playing. And nothing can replace team, nothing. But coaching is the next best thing. And but there's, the only thing that I really miss about coaching other than players, because I really like, you know, having players out to my house, put them in the locker room or coaching them. But the only other thing is winning. I mean, you know, it's like you're out. He goes, man, the only thing that I miss is walking across that sideline, shaking hands with a guy after you've beaten his ass. And that is exactly. And I looked at him. I go, man, that sums it up perfectly for me. But in my world, the losing is so so horrible and so awful that the winning was just relief, you know. And my dad knew that. My dad died a couple months ago, but he always said that. He said, man, with you, the losing is going to make you insane. And it almost did.
Well, and so obviously, you know, you've got and you alluded to it there earlier, you've got the good gig going with the radio and the ESPN, the commentating. So how did that come about, the radio gig and then the ESPN role?
Evan, I got incredibly lucky. I mean, what happened was when they decided to hire Tom Crean, I called a friend of mine who was a program director at WFNI. And he'd always told me, man, you'd be great in broadcasting. So it just, I got lucky. They had a slot open. This was like in April, and I called him. And they said, look, we're going to have a slot open. We're going to go local in like October. Love to have you in and kind of audition. So I auditioned. I got the job. And so that's how I got the radio gig. And then ESPN was completely lucky. I interviewed with the Big Ten Network. And didn't get the job. They hired other guys, and then I did a game, Butler and Davidson, and Evan. This was so incredibly lucky. It was on the Kokomo station, WHMB, I think it is. It was just on a local station. The guy there I knew, and he asked me if I would want to do it. Honest to God, Evan, I did the game. I'm talking to Gordon Hayward's dad after the game. I'm walking out of the gym. It's a beautiful day. My phone rings. Number I don't know. I answer it, and it's the head of talent for ESPN, Dan Steer. And, you know, he asked me what I did, and I told him, well, I just gotten hired by the Big Ten Network. He said, all right. He said, I just watched your game. He said, I just happened to watch it. Davidson, I wanted to see Davidson. I wanted to see Butler. And I thought you were great, and we want to hire you for next year after this year. So I met with them at the Final Four in India, and they hired me. It's kind of made it lucky as hell.
Now the program director, was it Kent Sterling at the time?
Yeah, that was Kent. Kent's been a friend of mine a long time.
Yeah, Kent's a good guy. I'm on his show on Thursday, so I get the chance to talk with him every now and again.
That's right,
so.
You are. I heard you. I know you're good on it.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I know, you know, speaking of that, and obviously I've got the opportunity to do that through the blog. I know you've been, you know, certainly appreciate your support and kind of giving us a little bit of run on your show. But what's your take, I guess, on in general, kind of the proliferation of blogs out there, especially where sports are concerned?
I think they're great. I mean, I do. I think they're great. Like, to say anybody could have a blog is not accurate. I mean, obviously anyone can, but they won't sustain unless you're really good and you're interesting and you bring unique content. And, blogs kill me a lot, but that's great. That's cool with me. There are different groups of blogs that don't like me, and I know that. But, you know, that's all right. I still go to them to find information. Like, I go everywhere before a game. I don't care if someone's, you know, written something bad about me, good about me, or doesn't even know who I am. I think they're great sources of information. And truthfully, I got a lot of respect for guys that can do it and sustain a blog, because everybody thinks it's easy. And as I'm not telling you anything you don't know, obviously, but everybody thinks, I'll write a blog and I'll be, you know, whatever. But hell, that ain't easy. There's nothing easy about it. And I enjoy them. I read them all the time, various ones.
Awesome. Well, kind of changing track a little bit, slightly anyway. So you mentioned your son, and he's at the University of Michigan right now, obviously, but several years ago, I saw him when he was playing basketball at Zionsville, and I saw him make a play. He drove to the basket, wrapped the ball around his back, did a reverse layup, and I thought there's no way he learned that move from his old man. Now is that true? Is that the Dan Dockich special there, or was that something? Was that all Andrew?
That was all Andrew. That was his first high school game as a JV player, and I thought it was awesome. I love that kind of stuff, man. I grew up, and in Northwest Indiana, two guys, there was a guy named Pete Turgovich, who played at UCLA, and with Walt and those guys, he was a starter on their national championship teams, and a guy named Greg Trikoff, who played at my dad's high school, Calumet, and they had all the shit, man. They had all the, you know what I mean? So it was like 1971, I'm 9 years old, I'm watching these dudes, and, you know, pick me. I love that. When Andrew, I remember him doing that. In fact, I remember it very vividly because it was his first game, and I'd never seen him do that. And I thought, all right, man, go get it done.
It was against Carmel, too, right?
I don't know. I can't remember.
I think it was Carmel. It was a Carmel. A.J. Hammonds was playing at Carmel at the time on the varsity, I believe. But, so anyway, I thought I was like, oh, boy, I didn't know. I don't know where he got that.
he didn't get that from me, but I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Nice. Well, speaking of things, you know, you learned from your father. I know you talked about your dad a little bit earlier. I know that you are obviously very close. And I remember, I don't get the chance to listen to your show as often as I'd like, but I'd had a doctor's appointment or something. I was coming home and it happened to be, it was the first day you were back on the air, after he had passed. And that, man, that segment you did to open that show, that was some of the best radio, honestly, that I've heard, because I mean, it was just, you could tell it was just coming straight from the heart, and you were just kind of going. And I guess I wanted to just first of all say how awesome I thought that was. I parked my car once I got to work and sat out there. But could you just maybe share a little bit about the way your father's legacy still impacts you now, and kind of what you're doing to keep that going?
Well, you know, every time I had a problem or a situation, the first person I called was him. And Evan, this is kind of, you know, bad, but or sad, I guess. But when he passed away, it was so sudden. You know, he was just in a store, and he took care of himself. He just dropped dead. Had a thing called a Widowmaker. And anyway, when he died, my mom was in the mall. She's hysterical. She calls me. My show's just over, so I drive like a crazy person to get up there. And, you know, I could tell he's dead, right? And you can just see. I've never seen a dead body before. But anyway, I got to go tell my mom. And, you know, we got to go to the morgue. And she's all upset, and we're all upset. And when we finally get back to my brother's house after going to the morgue, I was sitting on his couch, and I wanted to call my dad. Like, I was going to call my dad and tell him, Dad, something terrible happened. And I'm like, wait a second. It was my dad. I can't call him. And,
right.
And that sucks in my world. And, we try to keep, he was, his funeral or his wake was eye-opening, because he taught school at a melting pot school. I mean, you had you know, rich kids, poor kids, black kids, white kids, you had everything. And they loved him. They would come over for pizza, and they would come over for, you know, to hang out. And he taught me how to not worry about race or, you know, your social standing or anything like that. So, and in our neck of the woods, you know, you kind of had to. But so we try to keep alive with a golf outing, and, you know, I got kind of a shrine to him here in my house. So, you know, I'm giving you a long-winded answer. I'm sorry.
No. I mean, that's awesome. And, you know, well, obviously, you know, being from up there in the region, you know, and I know the area well. I know you used to talk about your dad holding court at the Viking Chili Bowl there.
Yeah.
So I know I've been past there many times. You know, I grew up in North Judson, so there wasn't anything to do there.
Oh, okay,
so
yeah.
Had to head up toward Valpo or Merrillville or what have you. But I know you know, obviously being a guy from the region, you grew up rooting for Chicago sports teams. But I know you know, you've talked about on the air really that of all those teams up there, the Cubs are really the only one that you're still kind of actively pulling for. So could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, every day, I mean, literally every day I would come home and, you know, the Cubs were playing, I would watch, and I was always hoping to be like the third inning, but usually it was the seventh by the time I got home from school. And they were my team. It was kind of a good day if they won, and I could do every batting stance of Kessinger, Beckert, Williams, Banks, Hickman, Callison, you know, Hundley, everybody. You do every batting stance, follow them every single day, and still do. And you know, as you get older, your allegiances change. Like I used to be a big Bear fan, now I'm a Cole fan. I kind of like them here, but nothing will ever change for me, baseball wise, other than the Cubs, and that's the only team that I root for. It's the only team that I you know, have to get up to see a game or two every year. My brother had season tickets for a long time. So, it's great childhood memories of going with my dad to the first game, opening day 1969. Willie Smith hit a grand slam. Going with my buddies and sitting in the left field line when there was nobody there and chasing foul balls. And I don't know. I just, it's the only team that I truly, truly love. And other than my sons or my daughter's dance teams, but other than those, Cubs are it for me professionally.
Nice. Well, you know, obviously, not in the best situation, right now for the team. And you know, we've been down a little bit for the last couple of years, but I guess, would you say what was a worse situation? The one Theo Epstein walked into with the Cubs or the one you had to deal with, there when you had come back to Bloomington?
Oh, I don't know. The one in Bloomington is certainly more personal.
Right.
You know, you got to deal with that. You know, the Cubs thing, and again, like I tell people, all right, I'm not 20 years old and sitting here going to believe all the stuff that I see. I've seen prospects come up. I've seen Lance Dixon, Earl Cunningham, Ty Griffin. You know, I've seen these guys, the second baseman, was it Bobby Hill or whatever his name is, you know, so I'm not a guy that's going to go yay rah, but you hope guys are right. And you know, Dixon or what's his face, Steele's done it before. So you hope that, you know, he's on track again, cause he's certainly broken it down to build it back up. The thing at Indiana, we knew was a train wreck. We knew on February 1st, we had a team meeting. I think I took over later on in the month, but we knew walking out of that meeting, we are done. It's just a matter of how done we're going to be and how quick we're going to be. So one obviously more personal than the other, because I'm in the middle of it, but the other one I've enjoyed following.
Absolutely. And, I mean, obviously it looks like they're on the way up. But so I know you kind of spoke to it already, but do you see how you felt so far? Do you feel any differently about some of the prospects they've got coming up now from some of those failed names of the past?
You know, I don't think any of those failed names were as highly rated. You know, Chris Bryant's number one. Baez concerns me a little bit because, you know, the woods is full with guys that could hit 17, 18, 19 home runs, but that's 200. I know he's 21 years old, but I'm really excited about him. But, you know, he's just a guy learning, so you got to give him a couple years. But damn, he's probably going to end up the year batting, you know, under 200, which isn't going to be great. But, you know, Brian, I hope Schwarber plays well. Sola, the rest of them, just going to need some pitching. Like, to me, the whole thing is, you know, to me, baseball, you know, get enough decent players, have a great bullpen, and good enough starting pitching, and you can play, it seems to me. But that closer role has always been a pain in the ass for the Cubs. It's always been that way. Even when Lee, you think about the Cubs relievers, Lee Smith, Bill Cottle, Willie Hernandez in that era. And then there's a bunch of others that, you know, when they went somewhere else became great. And I've never really understood that.
Right. It always seems that it's the curse,
and
right?
I'm missing some. I know, and I'm gonna be pissed off that I'm – hell, Eckersley became a great reliever, you know, once he left the Cubs. You know, I mean, it's like, shit.
Absolutely.
Let's figure it out.
Right. Hey, we'll see what happens. I know we're all in it together to find out. Rondon's looked okay, but, of course, that's you never know. It's a different game when the pressure's on and you have to win versus,
right.
You know, hey, nothing to lose. You know, and that's, I think, where the big differences come in for him. So all
Right. Hey, look, it's like, you know, everybody's a good three. There's a lot of 3 o'clock hitters, but the game's at 7. There's a lot of good players when you're, you know, 25 games out of the race, but what's going to happen when you got to have this win this night, every night? And that's what makes baseball so cool to me.
No, absolutely. Well, I one more question, I'll let you go.
Sure.
Hypothetically, you know you've got two nights left on Earth. You got to spend one of them in Chicago, one of them in Bloomington. Where are you going?
In Chicago, I'm going to the Billy Goat for lunch, and the Cubs have a night game. So then I'm going to Murphy's, and I'm buying everybody in the place whatever they want at Murphy's, because I don't care about my credit card. And then I'm going to the game, and then afterwards I am going maybe to Cubby Bear somewhere after, maybe Murphy's again, I don't know, because I really like Murphy's. Then I'm going to the Velvet Lounge, the Zebra Lounge, and I'm singing with the piano player, and then I'm finding a pizza, and I'm eating whatever deep dish pizza is open at 3 a.m. when I'm done with the day, and then I'm going to go die. In Bloomington, I am going. I got the whole day, so I'm going to go to Village Deli for breakfast. I'm going to go take a walk around campus, go to Assembly Hall, and challenge whoever the star is at IU to a one-on-one game, get my ass beat. Then I'm going to go to Nick's for lunch, get a Strom, stay at Nick's till dinner, having Buckets playing Sink the Biz, go to Zagreb's for dinner, and then I'm going back to Nick's, playing Sink the Biz, and I'm buying some street meat out in front of Kilroy's there, and then calling it a life.
I feel like you've thought about this. I feel like that's not something you came right off the cuff with.
I told you, my life is pretty simple, man. If I like something, I wear its ass out. So
hey,
I like Murphy's, I like Nick, I like Zagreb's, and I like the Zebra Lounge. So
hey, no, why deviate, man? If it ain't broke, right, don't fix
that's
it.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Awesome. Well, hey, I really appreciate it. I'm gonna put all this stuff together, probably try to get it out sometime this week.
Great.
I don't know if you want to give it a look over before I get it published. I might
yeah,
end up
do whatever you want
parts.
Do whatever you want, man. I'm cool with it. Do whatever you want.
Awesome. Well, we'll
all
see
right.
What goes on. I'll get it out there. I'll tweet it out to you and let you know.
Thank you very much, Evan. Thanks for thinking of me.
Thanks for your time, Coach. Have a great day.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye. All right. Bye.